the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too.
Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
I've got some famous friends you probably never heard of. But back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in. But when I go back home, I've got some famous friends. Yeah, I do.
We don't do shows in the middle of the day live, but you know what? Circumstances are what they are. We have to go live. This is Armchair Sports Talk. I'm Eric Dorsch, sitting in my house right now. You see Sergeant Salty on the screen, ready to go. This was him, all him. He's earning that producer cred this today on this one. Jay, we're kind of seeing through the grapevine, through news and Twitter and all that, that doesn't look like golf's going to play this week. Looks like he's probably out. Looks like it's going to be Tim Boyle. He's practiced all week, but it's leading us to an even better question. And you asked it is, what are the Lions doing? Why wasn't, if Goff couldn't do this, why was Goff even playing in that overtime when we were trying to get a win?
I knew this was going to happen. Like, I felt this on Monday and Tuesday when they said that he wasn't taking reps and they had Boyle doing it. I'm like, okay, let's let this build. And it's Friday and it's 2 o'clock and the news breaks that Tim Boyle is so the last snap that Goff takes is in overtime in a game that we tie, and everyone knows what the implications are with that. If Houston and us have somehow get into a pissing match, guess who might have the first overall pick? Because we have a tie, which means, like, for me, why? If we couldn't throw the ball, and I understand if he was hurt, and if he practiced this week and he was 50-50 to play, we're not doing this right now. But the fact that he didn't play, he didn't practice all week long. He's not going to be playing on Sunday. He couldn't throw the ball this past Sunday. This isn't Stafford where we say, okay, we can't rip him off the field. He's too prideful. Kelly might throw a pretzel at someone if we take him off the field. That's not happening here. This is Jared freaking Goff who couldn't throw a football. You could put David Blau in there. I don't care who you put in there. You could do, I don't know, pitch it to the halfback every time and have him throw it.
Well,
I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, I mentioned it to on the show yesterday that Tim Boyle wasn't dressed last week, so it wasn't going to be him, which is fine. I understand there was probably reasonings behind that, but Blau was dressed. They showed Goff, Blau, and Boyle all run out on the field together, and you know Blau had the helmet on. He was ready. So I even said it in a tweet during the game. If Jared Goff can't throw the ball, and he clearly can't throw the ball, why the hell is he on the field? I get that maybe he is that when he's healthy, he's the best quarterback option we have, which says a lot about the Detroit Lions. But at that point, they knew it. The Lions had a lot of success running the ball early in the game. They were doing it great, but Pittsburgh figured it out. They started stopping it. And I told those guys yesterday on the show, even if he throws a couple little quick dink and dunk passes, it at least gets that defense to back up a little bit because they can't play for the run every time. But Goff couldn't even do that. So you reach this overtime where you score, you win. That's all we needed. You score, you win. And we didn't even have a quarterback capable of creating that option for us because it was run. Oh, it's 3rd and 12. We're going to run it anyway. Let's run it. And you said in the text before we started the show that this all sits solely on Dan Campbell. So I want to get your thoughts on Dan Campbell and what's going on here and why it doesn't seem like he really knows what he wants to do day to day. It doesn't even seem like he's got a clear plan out there right now.
Yeah, no, you go from Captain Desperation to all the crazy stuff they pulled. And I forgot who they were playing. I think it was it the Rams when we were going balls to the walls?
Yeah. We played great against the Rams. Yeah.
I said it back then. It's not cute. That was not cute football. This is not cute football either. I would rather have Tim Boyle or Blau go out there. Obviously, it would have been Blau, but either win or lose. Like, was it Okwara or Flowers that knocked that ball out and recovered it, and the game was over effectively from it? Like,
yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It's just the decision making baffles me, and this is on Dan Campbell. And we could sit here and try to put a limit on how many mistakes he's allowed to make until we want to launch him out of the cannon, but he's going to see the next 4 years of his 6-year contract without fail. Like, they're going to give him a chance. But, like, man, you can't say the amount of shit that he says with coffee and kneecaps and all the things that we all thought were cute. and then have this like bipolar approach to coaching. Mm-hmm. It just pisses me off. He, like, that one at the end of a record, which there shouldn't be ties in football to begin with, that's on Dan Campbell. And if that screws up a draft pick, which then if we don't get Thibodeau or whatever, and then we end up with, God forbid, Aiden Hutchinson or something like that, that's on Dan. Like, that's solely on Dan. He is putting our GM in a bad spot to operate because he didn't know how to handle a quarterback.
There's nothing wrong with Aiden Hutchinson, by the way. You can stop making it sound worse than it is. But you're also dangerously walking into a topic we discussed yesterday on the show. And by the way, Russ isn't here. You don't have to sugarcoat it. There shouldn't be ties in any sport. But we're walking into a subject here that we kind of talked about, and that is that no matter what happens this year, obviously the 0-17 won't happen. We're guaranteed at least that. I mean, it's the saddest version of it, but we're at least guaranteed that. But Mike brought it up on the show yesterday, and that is that this is really just kind of the freebie year for Campbell. It doesn't matter what he does this year because you're replacing a franchise quarterback. You lost a large chunk of your offensive weapons, Marvin Jones, Kenny Galladay. You have an offensive line that should have been one of the best in the league, but Taylor Decker goes down early. Penei Sewell steps up at Taylor Decker's position, so there's a big question there. And then Frank Ragnow gets hurt. So you have all the holes in the defense or in the offense. And then you go to the other side on that defense where, pick a name, it's not a guarantee that they're starting in that position the following week because they're just throwing everything out there and seeing what does and what doesn't work. They've had some success in the secondary with some young guys, whether they're permanent players or just ride the success as long as it lasts. We've seen a little bit of decent play out of the defensive backs, the linebackers. The defensive line is a joke. I mean, Mason Rudolph didn't get pressured more than three times in that game all week. So it's the thing of, do you feel like this really is a freebie year for Campbell, or is the second game one started for this team, Campbell's on the accountability clock?
I think it is a freebie year. And I think even with all the injuries and position groups that you just mentioned very astutely, that's even more of a reason to take advantage of it being a freebie year. Mm-hmm. and to lose games. Like, yeah, no one wants to be the team to set the record, but show me rock bottom and then show me draft picks and then show me a plan forward to come out of that. Yeah. So you have to take advantage of the freebie year. And if he's just going to give us quotes at media press conferences and then have lackluster coaching, like, dude, commit to something. Commit to being great or shitty, because he's not doing either. It doesn't make sense for a franchise that's already laughable as it is. Like, we somehow are fans of this team. We don't have to be. We could clearly do whatever the hell we want, but we stay with it and we protect ourselves. Like, just make a decision, because look what we're doing now. It's Friday. I have the day off and I'm pissed off. I stopped cleaning leaves out of my yard because Goff's not going to play Sunday, which takes me back to last Sunday. This is what they do to me.
They do painful things to all of us, Jay. Let's be honest here. But when you now we look ahead to this week, and we look at the fact that it is Boyle. It's Boyle going against a hurt Cleveland Browns team. We don't even know if Baker's going to play. But I will say one thing for Campbell, and the only thing is I think it might just be because he's doing one thing we didn't get since, you know, I don't even know the last time. And that is, he's holding himself accountable and he's not sugarcoating anything. You know, Jim Caldwell didn't answer questions. He was very kind of, I mean, he didn't talk that much, to be honest. Schwartz was always angry. And you look at Matt Patricia just wanted to do his best impression of Bill Belichick. And that was to be very, very short with answers, very glib, very kind of, I'm not going to let you know what I have in my hand. And clearly that worked out for him. It's great. He's right back where he was as, you know, Bill Belichick's bellboy. But that's the thing. Campbell gives us the transparent answer. Campbell, and I said this because I think he's not that far removed from being in that locker room as a player. He never left the locker room. So he didn't have that time to kind of realize it's not life or death. To him, every win means something. So I like it. I think that might be the only reason I keep giving Campbell passes, is because he's transparent. He gives you exactly what you want, and that is a straightforward, honest answer, for better or for worse. And he's look, it would be very easy for him to start throwing these guys under the bus. Jared can't get it done. This guy can't get it done. But he's not doing that. He's legitimately backing every one of these guys, probably knowing full well that some of these guys will not be his guys next year. But right. he also, like I said on the show yesterday, I think he also knows no matter what, Jared Goff is his quarterback for another year and a half. They're not going to, even if they draft a quarterback in this draft, which doesn't look likely because there's not too many big name quarterbacks that you want on your team for franchise, for it's a franchise player. Jared Goff is going to be there till his contract's up. He's a free tackling dummy for the next year and a half. Use him as that. So I like Campbell for that fact. I like him because he's at least straightforward, transparent, and we don't have to ever question what he's thinking about.
And I do find that as a redeeming value. But show me the banner that goes in our rafters that says smooth talker or Mr. Transparency. Like, I guess I don't know. Caldwell was quiet. Patricia was fundamentals, which I'm going to rip that word out of the dictionary after him. But if you can show me competency on the field, I don't care who you are off the field. Yeah. It's refreshing to have Campbell talk the way he does. It's almost annoying now because he doesn't back it up with competent coaching. And that's the problem. I mean, if his goal was to get a tie, God bless him. Something must have been cooking in some sports book somewhere to get some amazing plus odds on a tie because he did it.
What's sad is a tie is technically better than a loss, but it feels just as bad as a loss, especially how they finished that game. I think I would take the transparency back a little bit and maybe be a little more guarded if it meant we got a different result on the field. I don't think any Lions fan would argue with that. Like we said, we want to talk about this real quick, so I'll ask you. It doesn't really change the odds in any way. In my opinion, it may help the Lions a little bit from the health perspective, and just it's a different look. But, I mean, what does this change for the Lions? New quarterback under center, still the same old offense.
I think what it changes for me is maybe how you approach the spread for this game. I mean, Baker or no Baker, Boyle's definitely in. Hey, if he's going to throw the ball, it's an improvement from Sunday. So I just
– it's very –
it's still we're going to lose, okay? Baker might be banged up. He might be play half the game, maybe not even a little bit, but Look, the Browns, this is a good moment for the Browns to come back, and we're just going to find another reason to do an emergency podcast and be pissed off because I don't know what the Detroit kiddies are doing anymore. I don't know what they're doing. I can't answer your question. I have no idea what they're doing but pissing me off.
I'm trying to see. I don't remember. You didn't have it in your notes, but it's at 12. Spread is 12 right now. I don't remember what it was. I think it was it 19? No, it was not. That's Michigan. No,
that's the other disrespect.
The other disrespect. The other Ohio disrespect. Yeah, the better Ohio football team. I agree for – I think it may alter the spread one way or another. I don't think that this should be that far of a separated game. 12 points seems a little generous. Cleveland's not doing anything that should wow anyone. They just lost their number one receiver to the Rams. Their other receiver, Jarvis Landry, has been, you know, to use your favorite word, a passenger this year. I would know. I have him on my fantasy team. Nick Chubb is week to week on what he's going to be able to do. Baker Mayfield, we don't know what another hit's going to do to this guy. He may be out for the season if he gets hit one more time. So 12 seems a little bit generous. But I will say that as I was teeing up the question, it's that exact reason. It changes how you have to scout. They have no tape on Boyle as a quarterback here. They don't know what Boyle can do that maybe Goff couldn't do. Look, a couple years ago, they had a really – like when Stafford got hurt, they had a really bad run of games where it was Blau and Driscoll in. Well, no one knew that those guys could run. So you saw Blau break for 20-yard runs because no one knew he could do that. That's the upside, I think, with Boyle is the only people that know what Tim Boyle can do other than the Green Bay Packers are the Lions front office right now and that coaching staff. So if you're Campbell, you're these guys, you're Anthony Lynn – you are building an offense that's perfect for Tim Boyle because guess what? It can't get any worse than what we saw with Jared Goff on the field.
That's fair. I mean, we have a chance at winning, which again, if we win this game, I'm going back to this past Sunday because we should have lost that game and we would have been, you know, in the win column and the loss column. If we win and have a tie, we are compounding our draft problems.
Well,
possible. It's possible on what you said, though, because they don't. No one. I don't even know what Tim Boyle does. I don't know what he looks like.
Mike actually sent me a picture. He looks like a used car salesman from Greenbow, Alabama.
You really don't. Can't wait to get a Kia from him on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent. No, I completely agree. And right now Houston is the opponent because it's 1-8. It's a 1-8 Houston Texans team, and us, we're competing for first pick or first place, whatever you want to call it. So, it's going to be an unpleasant game to watch. It's probably a loss. I think we all had a loss across the board. I don't think the adding of Tim Boyle makes that any easier for anyone. So, we'll see what happens with it. Before I let you go, cause I can't, we didn't have you enough yesterday. So I have to talk to you about last night's game. This was a beatdown by Vegas, and it was almost that thing of everything we had been so hyped on about this Red Wings team just caught up to them. And ever someone went, oh no, wait, we know how to stop that. And yep. That's what happened. I believe it was a 5-1 loss, 5-2 loss,
5-2.
So it's just that thing of, I'm not trying to say, oh, here's the downfall, but are we reaching that point now in the year? It's still early in the year, but are we reaching that point in the year now where, you know, maybe the shock and awe of what Raymond and Sider are capable of doing is maybe going to wear off a little bit, and teams are going to realize these guys are still rookies. We could still get away with some stuff that's going to probably get to them a little bit.
I mean, for the most part, it hockey has its ebbs and flows, and part of it is to be a point a game player, let me try that again, is very hard to do in the NHL. And yeah, we're going to literally have big nights and small nights. If we can stay consistent, I think a lot of people could find some solace in that. Because, yeah, there's going to be nights where you go to Vegas and get your teeth kicked in. Because it's already hard enough to play in that arena. It's electric, literally.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it is to be expected for Red Wings fans. I think what's going to help is the Olympic break. That's going to give time for us to heal. And I wouldn't be surprised. The records between us and Vegas before they played last night were very similar. Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised to catch the Red Wings maybe flirting with the last team into the playoffs if they can stay consistent. And I don't see them falling off. The talent always prevails, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Before we wrap this up, this is my last question for you, but I'm going to ask you to look into the Rolodex. You got to go. You're the lifelong hockey fan, you and Russ. We'll obviously ask this question to Russ when we get him on the show next. You know, he like you yesterday, he had a big boy job he had to work through. So look into that Rolodex. We all saw the play. You even sent a tweet of a similar play.
Yes.
Okay, but here's where I need you to look in the Rolodex. I'm going to ask you a question, and if it takes you a minute, I'm capable of filling, but I want a serious, genuine answer here out of you. When you look at not just that play, but just the talent, and pure talent alone, where does Connor McDavid rank in the all-time? Just on what he can do. When you look back at everybody we've seen play hockey in our lives, and before us, where does this guy rank in all-time physical ability to play this game?
I think when it's all said and done,
okay,
Connor McDavid is the perfect talent-wise player for the style of hockey that's played today. It is speed, it is agility, and it's the ability to make quick decisions with having excellent hands and being able to have hockey IQ. The game used to be slower. It used to be more physical. It's fast. The Canes and Taves, Crosby, McKinnon, Stamkos, they don't have the speed that McDavid possesses, okay? Yeah. So at the end of this whole thing, he's up there, man. Like, top three, top four, top five might be insulting, because if you watch his feet, and it's the weirdest thing, I don't have a foot fetish, and I have nothing wrong with people who do, but if you watch McDavid's feet, his edge work, his ability to do what he did twice, once to the Jets, and I think once to the Rangers, last night against the Jets, he undressed an entire team.
Literally.
And this is not me like trying to be crazy or anything. He's going to be one of the best players because of the era that he's playing in. If this NHL decides to stick with speed and talent, and maybe they get rid of fighting and they get rid of hitting and they make it all this just speed forward type league, he's going to destroy everything. He's a beast because he doesn't need to be physical. He's fast.
It's fair. This is his sixth year in the NHL. Honestly, from what I've seen, you just go off that fact. And I sent this to you and Russ last night. To me, Connor McDavid is that guy you make on NHL to create a player that it's just 99s for everything. You don't see a real weakness anywhere in what he can do. And I think what helps him is I think he transcends generations because he's a big guy. He's not like Kane, who's a smaller guy who it was all on the stick handle and what he could do there. He's a big guy. He could body with you if you really want to body. So it's insane. But I agree with you. I think anything after top five, you're really just doing him a disservice. But yeah. I'm going to go on a little ledge here. And if anybody thinks I'm crazy, they can think I'm crazy. That's completely fine. But I'll live with it. I think right now, after only 6 years in the NHL, now the numbers won't add up because of the time they've played, but right now, after 6 years in the NHL, Connor McDavid is already a better player than Sidney Crosby ever was in the NHL.
I'm not mad at that because Crosby came in at a different time. He's not as fast as McDavid. I think they both got exceptional status from the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, whatever. If you come from those leagues and you are a talented player, you get to play ahead of your age group, you get a certain status in those hockey leagues, whatever. Someone else like Russ could explain that better, but for just basically someone says, hey, you're really good, right?
Yeah.
I think they both were, but McDavid hasn't even shown signs of topping out. Like when you get to age 28, 29, 30, that's typically when you start to see some regression. This can't happen to him. He's too talented. He's only going to get better. It's only going to get bigger and faster.
Well, I think there's so much in the tank of what he can do that he just doesn't have to do because he's so much better than everyone else that maybe when the skates, or to use it your way, when the feet slow down a little bit, there's still so many other things that he's capable of doing that you never had to see him do because he could just blow by everyone and, you know, body everyone. And then when it slows down a little bit, he still probably bodies. But now you realize, oh, wait, this guy can handle the puck better than anyone else in the league. We're not faster than him, but now we just got to somehow stay in front of him.
A perfect example of that is in Anaheim right now. Ryan Getzlaf is like 52 years old in hockey age, but he's got Tory Terry. He's got Silverberg, and then Trevor Zegras is over there. He doesn't need to be the guy anymore. He doesn't need to be the one breaking over the blue line. He's the setup guy. He orchestrates, and it works well. And Anaheim went on like an 8 win streak because of it. So I could totally see McDavid just being that guy when he gets older and looking back on how fast he can skate in his youth because he's a genius.
Yeah. Yeah, this sounds like a dick question, but is it a little tainted by the fact that he's got the second best player on the planet playing with him every single day?
So Draisaitl?
Yeah.
Draisaitl and McDavid are like Belichick and Brady.
There you go.
You can look at it however you want, but if you put McKinnon on his team, or you give him Landeskog, or give him Barkov, or I know I'm screwing up the position groups. I don't really care.
No, I get it, but I get what you're saying. Yeah.
You put any of those guys, it's an immediate bump. Put Darren Helm on his wing. Darren Helm's a superstar to some people, which is outrageous.
Darren Helm might be the only person that could actually keep up with him, so that's completely fair. No, I see what you're saying. And by the way, I'm going to end it like this because it's the best way to end it. Yes, Justin Marcus just compared the best hockey player on the planet to Tom Brady. So take that for what it is.
Oh, damn it. No, I don't like that.
You're agreeing on GOAT status. That's it. We just wanted to get on here real quick, have a quick conversation about this. Look, Jay, I personally don't think it changes the outcome. Lions, to me, still lose 27-17. In this one, but we'll see. Maybe Boyle can show some signs. Maybe we see the end of Goff for the year. Maybe they shut him down and let Boyle finish this thing out. You're not playing for much anymore other than maybe not having the first overall draft pick if that's what you're looking to do. So I don't think it changes the outcome. For me, it's 27-17 Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, Browns get it done. This team has no business winning a game. We all thought since he would be the areas that we'd pick up a game or split with Minnesota or the Bears. Just stack up the L's, man. I want a high draft pick.
Absolutely. Well, obviously we'll get Russ's opinion on all this next time we talk to him. Hopefully get on here again soon. If we don't talk to you before then, happy Thanksgiving to everyone. We'll definitely be back after the holiday. But my thanks to Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus jumping on here real quick.
Hey, anytime. And go green. Keep chopping, baby. Let's do this on the road. It's a business trip. Let's get it.
Absolutely. And as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcast.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.